Good morning. I have lived through a revolution in my time in newspapers. When I started out in 1972 as a journalist, William Pat Caxton would have felt at home with the hot metal type and the linotype machines. He certainly wouldn't have recognised the newspaper industry when I retired in 2016. Now published on computers, and readers could read everything online without even leaving their armchair. The change you're all aware of, but one change you possibly not know much about is how newspaper owners have dropped. When I started in 72, every town had its own newspaper. The owner was a local businessman who wanted to develop a family business, look after the workers and contribute to the local community. Yes, it was important to make a living and a profit, but that wasn't the be-all and end-all. Sadly, the regional press are now owned by three multinational companies and the national press down to five. These multinational companies don't care about the well-being of the local communities. They're only in it for a quick profit, to get their bonus and to get their share options, plus giving a good dividend to the shareholders. I thought of the newspaper industry as I read this morning's reading from John chapter 10, as we continue the theme of I Am series, looking today at Jesus saying, I am the good shepherd. My theme today is the difference between the good, true shepherd and the false shepherd. There is a small parallel between the true shepherd and the local town newspaper owners of 50 years ago. These local newspaper owners and the true shepherds weren't in it just to make a maximum profit for themselves, whatever the cost. They wanted to serve their community and to make a difference. Jesus is saying you can tell the difference between the true shepherd and the false shepherd by how they act and what they do. The true shepherd was born to his task. He was sent out with his flock as soon as he was old enough. The sheep became his friends and companions. He was totally responsible for his sheep. He was prepared to go out and meet any dangers the sheep were facing, if necessary, to die protecting his sheep, just as Jesus did. In contrast, the false shepherds were a bit like today's multinational owners. The false shepherds came into the job not as a calling, but to make money. They were only interested in saving their own skin and their reputation. They were a bit like the newspaper owners and the multinationals, wanting maximum profits at any cost and not worrying about what happens on a local level. Writer W.M. Thompson in his work shows how difficult it was to be a shepherd. In his work, The Lamb and the Book, he said the shepherd's job was so dangerous. He knew one shepherd who protected his sheep from three Bedouin robbers armed with knives until he was hacked to pieces and died in front of his sheep. And if anything happened to the sheep, the shepherd had to produce some kind of proof that it was not his fault and he'd been unable to prevent the death of his sheep. As you know, the law laid down in Exodus 22, verse 13, if a sheep was mangled by beasts, let it be brought as evidence. And sometimes that meant going to incredible lengths, as Amos speaks about rescuing two legs and a piece of an ear of a sheep out of a lion's mouth in Amos 3:12. And remember, David tells Saul how he had to battle with the lion and the bear when he was looking after his father's sheep. Throughout these chapters of John, we have seen Jesus facing death threats. Now Jesus declares that the violent death is not just a dangerous possibility, it's his vocation. As in verse 15, Jesus says, and I will lay down my life for my sheep of my own free will. But is Jesus just talking of the negative calling and the apparent gloom of this vocation? after all, what use is a dead shepherd? But no, Jesus is also speaking about another calling and a much more positive aspect of this calling, that of looking after a bigger flock. He isn't going to rest content with delivering the present sheep from the dangers they face, the people of Israel. He is going to enlarge the flock considerably by bringing in a lot of different sheep, the Gentiles. Jesus says in verse 16, "And I have other sheep too, which don't belong to this sheepfold. I must bring them in too, and they will hear my voice. Then there'll be one flock and one shepherd." This shocked some of his listeners. In verse 19, it says these words caused a division amongst the Jews, with some saying, "Jesus is possessed, he's out of his mind. Why listen to him?" But as Israel's prophets and writers have already hinted in the Old Testament, God was never interested only in Israel. He was interested in the other sheep from every nation in the world. The Jewish Messiah is set to become the Lord, the Good Shepherd of the whole world. The Gentiles are no longer the enemy. They are the sheep who have not yet been brought into the sheepfold, which shocked many of those Jews listening to Jesus 2,000 years ago. One of the hardest things in the world is to unlearn. The word is most difficult to unlearn is exclusiveness. Once a people or a section of people get the idea they're especially privileged, it's very difficult for them to accept that the privileges which belong to them only, are now in fact open to everyone. This is what the Jews found difficult. They believed they were God's chosen people and that God had no use for any other nation. But here Jesus is saying there will come a day when everyone will know him as their shepherd. This unity comes from the fact that not all the sheep are forced into one field, but they all hear, answer, and obey one shepherd. It's not a unity of churches, it's a unity of loyalty to Jesus Christ. The fact that there is one flock does not mean there can only be one church, one method of worship, one form of church administration, but it does mean that all the different churches are united by a common loyalty to Jesus Christ. What can Christians today learn from this passage? In this parable, the flock is the church of Christ and suffers from a double danger. Firstly, it is always liable to attack from outside. The lions, the wolves, the robbers, the marauders, the politicians, the writers, the learned critics who knock the church today. Secondly, there may be trouble from inside the church, from the false shepherds who see their calling as a career and not a means of service. That is why every church should have a good, faithful, and strong shepherd to lead the church and to ensure the false shepherds do not win. Here Jesus refers to himself as the good shepherd in verse 11. But that word good doesn't quite catch the full meaning of the word John has written here. In the Greek, there are two words for good. There is agapos, which describes someone who has good morality, but also the word used here is kalos, which is about goodness, including kindness. Sometimes people speak about the good doctor, which I'm sure many of you do when you talk about Pete Crookle. What people say, they're not thinking of the doctor's efficiency and skill as a physician and good morality, which obviously Pete has. They are thinking also of the sympathy, the kindness, and the graciousness which a good doctor like Peter brings. In this picture of Jesus as the good shepherd, there is kindness and loveliness as well as strength and power. At the end of the First World War, a young French soldier was seriously wounded. His arm was so badly smashed, it had to be amputated. The surgeon waited by his bedside to wait for the soldier to regain consciousness before telling him the bad news. When the young soldier's eyes opened, the surgeon said to him, "I'm sorry to tell you, you have lost your arm." "Sir," said the young soldier, I didn't lose it. He gave it for France. That is the same with Jesus the Good Shepherd. He willingly accepted the cross for us and died to save us. The Good Shepherd didn't lose his life. He gave it for each one of us. Amen.